The Solomonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Thanks to Cordell the Juice Man in our Facebook group for that little ditty you heard there at the top of the show. This is episode 383 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Payback Sunday, May 17, 2015. I am the Solomonster. For those of you living under a rock, I had an interview conducted with JTG last weekend about his new book, Damn, Why Did I Write This Book?, which is available right now. You can check it out online. I think it's up in the Kindle store. It's available through Amazon. Well worth it. And the interview is a pretty good one, too. It's up on our YouTube channel. So if you have not yet listened to it, head on over there, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster. You can hit the subscribe button while you're there. And also in the description of the video, there is a link to the MP3. So if you would like to listen to it on your phone, on your, you know, whatever device you may have, you're traveling or at the gym, you don't have to just listen to it through YouTube. The MP3 is available. Just check out the download link in the video description. That goes for pretty much every video review, interview of any kind you will ever find on our YouTube channel. So head on over there and check it out. Definitely give it a thumbs up and leave some comments. Audible is offering listeners of The Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice, along with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster, that's our custom URL, and choose from over 180,000 different titles, among them Chris Jericho's most recent book, Shawn Michaels' new book, Hulk Hogan's book is up there, Lex Luger. I think there's even a book about Junkyard Dog, supposedly, people have told me. So tons of different books up there. I'm not sure if the new Daniel Bryan book, which is not due out until July, might get the audiobook treatment. But, you know, anytime something like that happens, just keep our URL handy, because when new books like that go up in audio format, you can get it for free through us. So audibletrial.com/solomonster is the URL. Punch that in every time you use it. It benefits our podcast and it benefits you because you're getting a free book. Just remember, when you put that URL in, you do have to then go through the actual registration process. Just putting that URL in is not enough. Sign up, do the trial membership. You can cancel at any time, and if you do, you still get to keep your book. How cool is that? So anyway, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And we have a pro wrestling tee store as well. In case you didn't know, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonster sounds off. We've got roughly 20 different t-shirt designs, more to come in the future. Up to size 5XL on all shirts. They ship all over the world. Yet another way to show your support for The Sound Off if you are a fan of this show. So prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. And last but not least, if you like what you hear every single week, you can make a PayPal donation. On our official website, thesolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. You just put in the value that you want to donate, whatever it is, and any other notes, I guess, in the notes section, and off it goes. And that's the most direct way to support this podcast. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out on this show. $30 or more will get you not only the nickname and the shout-out, but a plug for your own podcast, YouTube channel, business, website, whatever the case may be. Just make sure you include that information when you make the donation. Thank you to Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Matt Gold Rush Golden, Ray Big Dog Blick, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, the Reflection of Perfection Abraham Lara, the Marietta Mahler Alexandru Mata, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Jacob Go to Hell Odell, the Lady Killer Chris Osorio, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Save the World Sean Tilly, True Grit Tim Goggin, Sudden Impact, Jeffrey Matthews, Bad Apple, Benjamin Allen, Heartstopper, Joseph Garcia, Lovely Laura Turnbull, Super Splash, Steve Garastieta, and Jamerson, Are You Scared, Scanlon, who would like for me to give a shout-out to the Almost Nerds podcast, where they talk about everything from tabletop games to movies, comics, wrestling, a bunch of other things. You can check it out on iTunes or at podcastgarden.com under the Hobbies category. That's the Almost Nerds podcast. Check it out again at iTunes or podcastgarden.com. I also want to give a shout-out to Heather, who I know is listening. Thomas says hello. WWE Payback is tonight in Baltimore, Maryland, on pay-per-view and the WWE Network. And so let's get into the predictions here from the show. We will start from the bottom of the card, work our way up to the main event. The pre-show, the pay-per-view kickoff match, is the Ascension against the Meta Powers. That is their official name. They are not the Mega Powers, they are the Meta Powers. Axelmania and Macho Mandow. I'm enjoying this for what it's worth. I know some people don't like the whole Macho Mandow thing, and they think it's offensive to Randy Savage, or they just think it's a waste of Damian Sandow. It absolutely is a waste of Damian Sandow. I'm not going to deny you that. I just never had any faith that they were going to do anything with him after he came out and cut that promo all those weeks ago. I accept the fact that it is a lost cause. We can sit here and we can complain about it and complain about it, and God knows I've done that. But there's no point. They have him slotted in a certain role. Him doing comedy, frankly, I think him getting over with that Mizdow gimmick may have been not just one of the best things, but one of the worst things that could have happened to that guy. Because now they almost have him slotted in a Santino role. Oh, he's the guy you laugh at. And it's very hard to overcome that. That's not the kind of guy, I'll tell you this, who will ever be competing for the World Heavyweight Championship. So he's doing the gimmick. Jay Lethal does it better, but they don't have Jay Lethal for reasons that I can't comprehend, because Jay Lethal is not only a great wrestler and he's young, but he actually is great on the entertainment and the comedy side, so I don't know why they never saw an interest in him, but that's a different story for a different day. I'm enjoying the Macho Mandow Axelmania stuff, and I have them as my pick to go over here in this match. We have King Barrett against the new sensation, Neville. Crown or no crown, Barrett is going to be a loser in this company. And Neville really needs a big win here, so I'm going with Neville as my pick. Sheamus one-on-one with Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler got the surprise shocking win at Extreme Rules, even though in the end he was the one who ended up kissing Sheamus' ass anyway. But I think Sheamus is going to get that win back here. So Sheamus is my pick. We have the New Day against Tyson Kidd and Cesaro. 2 out of 3 falls for the tag team titles. This is going to be the show stealer right here. I'm calling it right now. And I think New Day gets the win, probably as they should. I mean, I'm a big fan of Cesaro and Kidd, but the New Day have a good thing going on right now. They just won the titles. You know, why take it off them so soon? So I think the New Day are going to hold on to the championship. Bray Wyatt against Ryback. 2 guys going nowhere and fast. Bray Wyatt needs this win. He lost to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Still goes around calling himself the new face of fear, which I thought was kind of the title he was competing for almost at WrestleMania with The Undertaker, and then The Undertaker beat him fair and square, and the guy is still calling himself the new face of fear. It's almost like he's in denial. Doesn't realize that he was a loser at WrestleMania. I'm not quite sure what there is to fear about somebody like that, but anyway, there's more upside to Bray Wyatt than Ryback at this point. That's just kind of how I look at it. Going forward, who's the guy who's going to get the bigger push? Who's the guy you're going to get the most out of? I still think that's Bray Wyatt, even though I'm sick and tired of his promos. But I still like the guy, and so he's my pick to win here. We have Naomi and Tamina against the Bella Twins. I'm going to go with Naomi and Tamina. I don't know why the Bella Twins would win. I think this is all being done to set up a championship match for Naomi at some point. And if that's the case, they have to win. Unless they're going to break them up. They just got put together. They're going to break them up. So Naomi and Tamina are my pick. John Cena and Rusev. I quit match for the United States Championship. John Cena, the man who never gives up. The man who never quits. And I know I pitched the idea a few weeks ago of this being one giant swerve, Lana is not going to go babyface. They're going to do a deal where, you know, Rusev threatens to put her in the Accolade, and John Cena, who's tied up in the ropes or something, or handcuffed or whatever, says, "I quit," as a way to save Lana. Lana then smirks and smiles, and it was all a giant ruse, and Rusev is once again the United States champion. I don't think they're going to do it, though. I don't think they're doing it. It looks like they're going all in on Lana as a babyface. They're going to break them up. I could see Lana factor. I mean, Lana will factor into the finish in some way, but I think it will probably end up being to the detriment of Rusev. So they'll screw him out of the match somehow. Maybe Cena has him locked in the STF, won't let go. Lana throws in the towel or something along those lines. And then they can do the official breakup on Raw the next night if they want to fast-track the whole thing. So I guess we'll see. But John Cena is my pick. John Cena is going to retain the United States Championship. It was interesting that Rusev on his Twitter last night posted a tweet thanking the Americans at State College, PA, where they had a house show. Apparently, I'm guessing it was probably one of the students, but I don't know. But one of the fans in the audience somehow stole his star of the Russian Federation. And Rusev said, "I hope eBay is good to you." So his official Russian star has been lifted. I don't think Putin's going to be too happy about that. Actually, if I'm the person in the crowd who stole the star, I'm looking over my shoulder here. That's what I'm doing. We have the main event. I don't think I'm missing anything here. I think we've covered all the other matches. So Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, and Randy Orton, Fatal 4-Way for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. If Rollins does not leave as the champion, Kane is fired from the authority as the director of operations. Which means what, exactly, would be my question. You know, the guy can still wrestle. He's not off the roster. When Kane showed up a few weeks ago threatening to give his 2 weeks' notice, it's not like he was leaving the company. So what does this really mean? And also, here's the other point here. This is the second straight pay-per-view now where the outcome of the main event is built around what will Kane do. So we automatically know we're getting some kind of fuck finish to this match. And you know that Ambrose is probably the one taking the fall. But, you know, they've just added another pay-per-view for the month of May, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Why not put the title on Ambrose here? That's the question I would pose. Not why. Why not? There's an easy way for them to actually further this Kane storyline in a way that actually makes sense. And I know that's not their bread and butter, but yes, there is a way to do this where it actually makes sense. You know, like I said, it was only a few weeks ago that Kane came out on Raw. He was sick and tired of dealing with Seth Rollins. He went over to Triple H, and he said, "I'm giving my 2 weeks' notice as the director of operations." And Triple H talked him out of it. That's when he made him the guardian of the gate at Extreme Rules. If Kane despises Seth Rollins so much and does not want the job anymore, then kill two birds with one cat and let Kane cost Rollins the championship. Ambrose, you know, shocks the world, because I don't think there's too many people who honestly believe Rollins is losing the title, let alone to Dean Ambrose. So you have a nice little surprise there at the end of the show. Ambrose, who's a big fan favorite, wins the championship. And I'm sure that Ambrose, I mean, Roman Reigns has kind of turned a corner in a way. He's not getting booed in every city. But I still think in this match, he may get some boos, because I think the crowd will firmly be behind Dean Ambrose. So he wins the championship. He walks out with the title. Kane is gone from the authority. Rollins is going to get his rematch at the Elimination Chamber show. I think they're doing a title match on that show, just not in the chamber. So he's gonna be entitled to a rematch anyway. And on that show, you can switch the belt back onto Seth Rollins. Shake things up a bit. You know, I don't see why you can't do something like that. I know that will upset some people. "Oh, you're going to put the title on Ambrose for 2 weeks." But you know what? So what? Shake things up a bit. But, they have to get the belt back on Rollins, though, because they need to do Lesnar versus Rollins at SummerSlam. That's a match that absolutely has to happen. I want to see that match. I want to see Brock Lesnar bouncing Seth Rollins around the ring like a rubber ball. Okay? That's a match I think that could be a match of the year. So I would like to see that match happen, and it should be for the title. But that doesn't mean that in the interim you can't do a quick title change. I mean, I'm not saying go back to the Attitude Era when the title was a hot potato and it switched five times in 3 months. You can get away with doing it once. You've got this other show in 2 weeks. You could just put the belt back on Rollins then. But I'm going to say they play it safe. That's what I... Now, that idea is the idea that I'm pitching that I would like to see happen. As far as what I think will happen, I say they play it safe. Rollins retains the championship. And so, officially, Rollins is my pick, even though I don't think it should be him. The second pay-per-view, like I mentioned, that was added for the month of May is a network exclusive. It will not be airing on pay-per-view. It is the Elimination Chamber coming up on Sunday, May 31st in Corpus Christi, Texas. Corpus Christi, a notoriously terrible city for WWE crowds. They had a house show scheduled that night. This just tells you how last minute this whole thing was. They had two house shows scheduled that night, one of which was in Corpus Christi. So the Corpus Christi show has been converted to a pay-per-view. The other house show has officially been canceled because they need everybody at the building for the pay-per-view. And I guess Corpus Christi is one of the few buildings left that can actually support the structure. It was Stephanie McMahon, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, who, I don't know if it was at a conference call or some event that she was at, she was the one who said the reason they were dropping the Elimination Chamber show in the first place was a lot of these newer buildings, I guess with whatever apparatus they have above the court or above the ring in the middle of the arena, they can't hang this gigantic, heavy chamber structure. Some buildings can still support it. I guess Corpus Christi is one of them. But that was the reason they got rid of the show in the first place, not because it performed poorly. In fact, I think the Elimination Chamber was one of the shows that did better. Right behind, like, Mania and Rumble. The Chamber, the Chamber might have actually been doing better than SummerSlam. I'm not sure about that. So, but that was the reason why they got rid of it in the first place. So it's coming back, and per the WWE website, the Tag Team titles and the Intercontinental Championship, which is now vacant, will be decided in Elimination Chamber matches on that show. The United States title and the WWE Championship will also be defended. I don't believe it will be inside the Chamber. So this will be the first time we ever see the tag team titles defended in a chamber match. The Intercontinental title, we'll talk about Daniel Bryan on Raw in a second, but he forfeited the championship, so the title is vacant. They had to do something like this. We've seen a lot of tournaments recently. I don't think that they were going to do another tournament. So, yeah, this is a fine way, I think, to decide a new champion. That's a pretty exciting way to do it. I don't know who's going to be in the match yet. I have this sinking feeling that Sheamus is going to walk out with the Intercontinental title. And look, I'm not a fan of the new heel gimmick. I just I don't know. I have to give this some more thought on exactly who I'd like to see with the title. Ideally, I'd love to see Neville, especially since he lost in the finals of the King of the Ring, and Barrett did more damage than anything else the way he was booked when he was the Intercontinental Champion. He's been champ like six times. To go back to him would just be more of the same old shit, so I don't have any interest in... You know, he's got the crown, the king gimmick, he doesn't need the title. I'd love to see Neville get it. I think Sheamus probably ends up getting it, but we don't know yet who's in the match. We'll find out after Payback. But, you know, I was thinking about this. So we have Payback this weekend. We have NXT TakeOver on Wednesday. We have the Elimination Chamber in 2 weeks. And Money in the Bank is 2 weeks after that. So if you're a wrestler and you end up in both the Chamber and the Money in the Bank match, you better have plenty of Z-Packs on hand. That's rough. And I'm sure there'll be some overlap. Some of the guys in you know, one of the Chamber matches will probably end up in that Money in the Bank match. And those are some rough matches right there. And they can ill afford to have one of their stars go down to injury. They've had problems with a few different injuries recently. And now we're heading into the frickin' Chamber and this gigantic multi-man ladder match. I just feel like they're asking for trouble. So yeah, there's a lot of WWE shows coming up over the next 4 weeks or so. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Cincinnati, Ohio, the hometown of the Lunatic Fringe, Dean Ambrose. He's pretty much over in every city, but obviously he was even more over this past week. The big story coming out of the show is that Daniel Bryan has forfeited. He has surrendered the Intercontinental Championship due to injury. He had an MRI done. The MRI results came back. They were not good. He is not sure if he will be out for weeks, for months, or if he will ever be able to return. I will predict he will be back. It will probably be a couple of months, but I do think he'll be back. I do not think this is the end of Daniel Bryan. I do not think he is going to retire. One more injury and he might, but I think he will be back in a few months. That's just my personal belief. But it was very sad, you know, to see him come out. He looked very downtrodden. At first, I thought it was an angle. I thought he was coming out. He was going to tease that he had to forfeit the title again 2 years in a row. But then he was going to say, I'm back. And everybody would chant yes. And they would set up a match at Payback with somebody who I don't know. But no, he came out and he said, I'm hurt and I can't go. And that makes 2 years in a row now that Daniel Bryan has won a championship at WrestleMania. And has had to forfeit that title immediately after. And it sucks. It really sucks. I really feel bad for the guy. He's beaten the shit out of his body for so long. He's been through so many wars over the years. And, you know, to get to that point where he's basically a made man, thanks to the fans. He's a made man in this company. So even though they kind of slotted him further down the card, he's one of those guys where if you need him in the main event, you can plug him into the main event. You know, he may never be WWE champion again, but he'll always be in that upper tier of talent in WWE because they have so few real main eventers in that company. So he's always going to be in that mix. And he finally made it, and now he's getting hurt all the time. They don't know what's wrong with him with this injury, and then he gets I don't know what this injury is. I don't know if this is a concussion. I don't know if this has to do with his neck, if it has to do with the nerve in his arm that was giving him problems. We don't know. They're being very secretive about this, and I don't know if that's a good thing or not. They're being very, very secretive about what the nature of the injury is. I would think at some point it will leak out, but they're doing a pretty good job of keeping it under wraps. So we don't know what the injury is. It almost sounds like a concussion to me, and I say that because, you know, they're talking about we don't know if it'll be weeks, we don't know if it'll be months, and you look at him and he looks fine. It's not like his arm looked messed up or, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. And there were some rumors that maybe it was a concussion, but it's all speculation. We just don't know, but it just sucks. It sucks for the guy because I was really looking forward. I think the plan was probably to build to a unification match or just a champion versus champion match with him and Cena at SummerSlam. We haven't seen them wrestle since SummerSlam 2 years ago. They had that great match. Both guys were, I think the idea was to bring more value and prestige to the secondary titles. John Cena, I think, has been doing a pretty damn good job of that with this whole US Open Challenge thing. And Brian, I have no doubt he would have gone out there week after week and just kicked ass. You know, Brian could have wrestled everybody on the roster from the guy lowest on the totem pole to the guy at the very top, and really had some classic matches for that championship, and now that's not going to happen, and who the hell knows who this title is going to end up on. It really should end up on somebody higher up the card, so they can still go in that direction where you have kind of a main event level guy against Cena at SummerSlam. I just don't know who that would be. I don't see them putting the title on Randy Orton. Let's say Orton doesn't win the championship at Payback, they put him in the Elimination Chamber match for the title in 2 weeks and he wins it. I'm not saying they can't do that or that it wouldn't help bring some value to the title, but that means the end game is John Cena versus Randy fucking Orton, and I don't want to see that. I just do not want to see John Cena versus Randy Orton. I don't care how many championships are on the line in that match. I do not want to see that. So if it's not Orton, then who is it? Could it be Ambrose if he doesn't win a Payback? They put him in the chamber? I mean, maybe. I still have this feeling it's going to end up being Sheamus, but I just think it has to be on somebody higher up. I guess that would disqualify Neville from the conversation. Although Neville and Cena had an awesome match on this show. That's what I wanted to talk about next. Neville beat John Cena by DQ. He answered the US Open Challenge. He came within a hair of winning the championship. Maybe. We'll never know. Rusev interfered when Neville landed the red arrow. Almost immediately after Neville landed, Rusev was in the ring and put a foot right in his back for the DQ. This was a great match. Better than the Cena match with Sami Zayn, even though that one had a clean finish and this one didn't. Neville also kicked out of an AA in this match. And here's the thing, you know, it felt special when they did that in the Sami Zayn match. Not as much this week. I think there's a message there for WWE. Don't marginalize this guy's finish. He's the top guy in the company. Don't marginalize his finish. I know we've seen it in main event matches with like him and Rock and him and Punk a gazillion times, people kicking out of the AA. But when he's wrestling guys lower down on the card, every now and then, if somebody kicks out, it means something. Like, it meant something in the Sami Zayn match the week before. But now, if they're going to do this every week, it's not going to mean anything. You know, save the kickouts for special occasions. It's not special if everybody kicks out of the AA. They did it with Barrett when Raw was back in the UK. You know, that's fine. Got a big pop in front of the hometown crowd. But there have been a bunch of guys, you know, non-main event guys kicking out of Cena's move, and they need to dial that back a little bit. The finish here, though, I thought was perfect. That right there, what they did on this show, is a disqualification, you know, fuck finish, call it whatever you want, that makes sense. Because Rusev did not want Cena to lose that championship. If Cena lost the title here, we still have an I Quit match at the pay-per-view, but there's nothing on the line. So Rusev would want John Cena to go into the pay-per-view with the championship. You know, plus what it also does, it keeps Neville strong and the Red Arrow even stronger, because you have the question now of would John Cena have kicked out of the Red Arrow? We'll never know. We'll never know the answer to that question. That could be something they revisit months down the road if they do another Neville-John Cena match. I'm not saying they're going to do it at SummerSlam, but I'm just saying they could come back to that point and say, listen, you know, this first match, he nailed the move, and it looked like John Cena was beat, but we never did find out. I think this open challenge gimmick is the best thing to happen to the Cena character since the Chain Gang days. I really do. I look forward to his segments now. Not so much the promos, but I look forward to his matches on TV, probably more than anything else on this show, week to week. Part of that is how dull I think most of the other storylines are on the show without Brock Lesnar around. But I'm really enjoying the Cena stuff, and I hope they keep this gimmick going for a while. Kane and Roman Reigns were supposed to have a match, never got started. Kane attacked Reigns outside the ring. It was just one giant brawl. Kane went for a chokeslam through the announce table. Roman escaped, caught him with a Superman punch, and then speared him over the table, not through it. Although Reigns did get up on top of the table and basically stood over Kane's prone body when this was over. This was good. It was better than any actual match would have been between the two of them. The best part about this match, it never hit the ring. And I know they did wrestle on SmackDown. I didn't see it. I know Reigns won. I'm almost positive this brawl here was better than the actual match. Tamina beat Brie Mode in 3 minutes and 34 seconds with a super kick. This was, I wrote on Twitter, bowling shoe ugly, to steal a phrase from Jim Ross. This was just sloppy as all hell. Just one giant slop fest this match was. Not a good exhibition for the Divas division. You know, I'm torn here, because this show, if there's one thing about the Divas on this show desperately needs a new infusion of female talent. Charlotte has no business being on NXT anymore. And Sasha Banks also. She should be up on the main roster. No doubt about it. She may be, I mean, her and Charlotte may be the two best that the company has right now. I'll even slot them ahead of Paige. Natty, as good as she is, I mean, they're on that same level with her. That's how good these women have become. The thing is, though, the minute they promote them, it's not going to be the same. So everything we love about Charlotte and Sasha Banks and the character development and the long matches that they have, all of that just goes poof, it disappears. We're not going to get that. So everything that we clamor for and look forward to, and these women are on NXT television, if you take all of that away, if you strip it all away, then they're just like everybody else. So why would I want to see them on Raw? Like, I want to see them on Raw, but I don't want to see them on Raw. I'm very conflicted. You know, the Charlotte and Sasha matches that we've come to enjoy, they're just not going to get the opportunity to do that on the main show, because it's not a priority to Vince McMahon. It's just not. 3-hour show, you give them 3.5 minutes. I mean, I don't care how good Sasha Banks and Charlotte are. You give them 3 minutes every single week. There's not a whole lot you can do in 3 minutes. So I would almost rather they just stay where they are. But they really should be on the show. It's just, it's a tough deal. We had Macho Mandow against Curtis Axel. Mandow was going for the Savage Elbow when... And by the way, as he's doing this, JBL on commentary says, somewhere Randy Savage must be rolling around in his grave. Which would be very difficult since Savage was cremated and not buried, you jackass. So anyway, he's going up for the elbow when the Ascension make their way out with a weapon of mass destruction in hand, that being a microphone. That is like their kryptonite. May as well be a frickin' stick of dynamite in their hands. I've made it very clear to all the people who think I'm a little too hard on the Ascension. You know, come on, Solomonster, they're really not that bad. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Did you see any of the promos they did on NXT? I'm guessing you did not. I'm not talking about matches. I'm talking about the characters. I'm talking about the promos. They sucked. They sucked. Nothing has changed. It's the same shitty material with the same shitty delivery, mainly by Connor. You know, I can't even really pick on Victor too much. He's average. Victor is he's fine. He's okay. But Connor is just atrocious on the microphone. I mean, that line about how there's a difference between being laughed at and laughed, and then there's just this long pause, and he goes, laughed with. Oh my God, I cringed. I cringed like I had just seen a little kid walking in on his parents while they were bumping uglies. How are these guys on TV for the biggest wrestling company in the world with all of the great tag teams that are out there on the indie circuit right now? How are these guys on TV? How did they make it through? Because they spent 5 years in developmental, and so, well, it was their time. It's like taking a ticket when you're going to the deli to get macaroni salad. Well, who has number 49? I guess it's your turn. Is that how the system works? Because there's a lot of other guys who have been down in developmental for 5 years, like Colin Cassidy, for example. And I guarantee you, if you bring him and Enzo up, maybe their matches won't be that great, but his characters, as personalities, they blow these guys out of the water. Why are they down there and the Ascension is on TV? I don't get it. I don't understand how this works. There are only so many sacred spots to be had on the main WWE roster. Everybody in wrestling, I don't care what they say. I shouldn't say everybody. I mean, the Young Bucks are doing fine on the indies. But most guys getting into wrestling, their lifelong dream, their goal. JTG talked about this when I interviewed him last week. The dream is to go to WWE. Either because you were a fan since you were a kid, so you romanticized about what it would be like one day to work for WWE, right? The same place where Hulk Hogan was champion and Steve Austin was champion. And, you know, we'll have wrestlers, I'm sure, years from now who say, I grew up on John Cena as WWE champion, as frightening as that is. So some guys are like that. Other guys just look at it and go, well, they're the biggest wrestling company in the world. They make hundreds of millions of dollars in profit. And so that's where I want to be. I want to be a TV star. I want to have fame and fortune. I want to make a shitload of money. And WWE is the place that gives me the best chance to do that. And so there's only so many spots to be had, and these guys have one of those spots. I just can't believe it. I really can't believe it. The announcers buried this entire thing, as they usually do. That's their shtick. That's their MO. So then Axel and Sandow did the old Mega Powers handshake, which any wrestling fan from the 80s has tried at least once in their lifetime with their friends. They had a backstage segment that apparently aired only on the app with these two guys cutting an old-school Mega Powers promo that was actually really entertaining. It's up on their YouTube channel now. It's about 4 minutes long if you didn't see it. They actually have, like, the old-school... They have the green screen, and they have, like, an old-school backdrop. They play the old primetime music when they do the cuts between the different segments. It's actually very entertaining. So, of course, this never aired on TV, and never will. Speaking of mid-card talent going nowhere, no Adam Rose on this show Monday night. This was the week... This was the week, if they wanted to capitalize off the ESPN E60 special, this was it. This was the week to do it. You know, you show some clips, you let them come out and renounce this failing gimmick. Wasn't even on the show. Wasn't spoken of. Wasn't even in a backstage cameo. Nowhere to be found throughout the 3 hours. So that tells you right there what their plans are going forward for Adam Rose. Maybe they will switch him back over to Leo Kruger. Again, I was never a fan of Leo Kruger. Leo Kruger is just another gimmick that is not him, and it's not going to work. So if that's their big plan for the guy, then he's dead in the water. But you know what? He's dead in the water no matter what, because this show cinched it for me. They have no plans for this guy. They don't care. Rollins versus Orton in the main event. We had a J&J security run-in for the DQ. Kane comes out, grabs a chair. Reigns, Ambrose, they'd both run in, not to save Orton so much as just to get their hands on Seth Rollins, who is now surrounded by all of his opponents in the Fatal 4-Way of Payback. He's all alone in the ring. Kane is outside. Kane's not lifting a finger to help him. Dirty Deeds by Ambrose, Spear by Reigns, finally an RKO by Orton. I know I'm not the only one who thought for a moment there that when Ambrose and Reigns were picking Rollins up to feed him to Orton, that they were going to do a triple powerbomb. But nope, just an RKO, and then Reigns delivered a spear to Orton. Ambrose gave his former Shield buddy Dirty Deeds. So Dean Ambrose stands tall 2 weeks in a row, which is probably bad news for Dean Ambrose tonight. While Kane just stands idly by, never lifting a finger to help out Seth Rollins. There is trouble in the Authority, and that storyline cannot end soon enough, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT TakeOver Unstoppable is coming up this Wednesday night on the WWE Network, May 20th. I am very much looking forward. These TakeOver specials, you know, some are better than others, but they always deliver. So if you're one of these people who still hasn't tried the network, you haven't signed up or sampled it, I would recommend that you do so. It's a free month, so if you're a new subscriber, you know, what the hell do you have to lose? You're going to get a really, really fun wrestling show, and then after that, if you want, you can cancel. It's entirely up to you, but I would recommend you do whatever has to be done to check out this show, because there's a few potential show stealers on here. One of them is not Baron Corbin and Rhino, although they are having a singles match on this show. Let's just run through some predictions here. Baron Corbin is my pick over Rhino. I don't think this is going to be the only match between these two, so I guess they could get away with having Rhino win, but I don't think he does. I think Baron Corbin gets the win. We have Bayley and Charlotte against Dana Brooke and Emma, Evil Emma. Dana Brooke is their new pet project. Charlotte is just kind of there. There's no reason for her to win. In fact, if she's on her way out, she probably should be putting people over, so I figure Dana Brooke and Emma get the win, probably with Dana Brooke getting the pin. Number one contenders match is still officially slated to be Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, and Tyler Breeze. By all accounts, Hideo Itami is not wrestling anywhere for many months, and they've already taken him off the lineup for their Japanese tour in July, so I would be nothing short of stunned if he was in this match. It is a three-way. I guess technically they could do something at the beginning of the match where he gets taken out, but for all intents and purposes, this is really just going to be Finn Balor and Tyler Breeze, unless they add somebody else to take a Tommy spot. And Finn Balor, in that case, is my pick. I probably would have gone with Itami if he was in this match, but being that he's not, most likely I'm going with Balor. Tag team titles on the line. Blake and Murphy defend against Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy. I have a funny feeling we may see a Carmella heel turn here in this match. Carmella, I think, is going to turn on Kaz and Enzo, and Blake and Murphy will retain their tag team titles. That is my prediction. NXT Women's Championship, or as I call it, the co-main event on this show. Sasha Banks defends against Becky Lynch. I've seen some reports of their matches on some of the house shows. NXT was in Philly. They had a couple of different house shows this past week that were very well received. People who went were emailing me saying it was a ton of fun. And so I think these two are going to go out there and have the potential to steal the show. And I think that Sasha Banks gets the win. She is still a new champion. And again, unless they're calling her up to Raw the next night, there's no reason for her to drop the title so soon. I think they'll have a kick-ass match. I think Sasha gets the win in the end and retains the championship. And the main event is on. Kevin Owens defends the NXT championship against Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn is hurt, but by all accounts, he is a go for this match. Now, how much he can do with a bum shoulder, I don't know. We don't know what the nature of the injury is. If it's a rotator cuff tear, if so, how bad? If it's a strain, again, they've been very secretive with the exact nature of the injury, but he is hurt, but apparently well enough to go. So I don't know that we're going to get this all-out kick-ass Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match we know the two of them can have. We may have to wait on that for a few months. But I still think whatever they have up their sleeve here is probably going to be pretty damn good. Kevin Owens retains the championship in the end. If Sami is hurt, they're not putting the belt back on him. So Kevin Owens is my pick. Now, for what it's worth, Samoa Joe posted a photo of himself on Twitter at the gym. He's wearing a shirt, but he's looking in as good a shape as I've seen him in since his run as Ring of Honor champion over a decade ago. He looked better in this photo than he has, I think, at any point during his entire TNA run. except maybe the first year. He looked in damn good shape, almost like he was motivated. I can't imagine what that means. Here's the thing. He's still booking indie dates into July. He's actually continuing to book independent wrestling dates. He's not doing that only to turn around and cancel on the promoter. So I don't know what's going on with that. But remember what I said last week. And I know all of these rumors now have started to leak out about Joe and TakeOver. Remember what I said last week before any of these rumors even started to spread. I think it would make sense for him to debut on this special. If he's not replacing Sami Zayn, if Sami Zayn is going to wrestle, and he's not replacing him in the main event against Kevin Owens, they could always have him replace Hideo Itami in the three-way and put him in there with Finn Balor and Tyler Breeze. There's a number of different things you could do with this guy. Even if he just walks out after the main event, maybe the main event isn't much of a match because Sami is hurt. Kevin Owens did promise on NXT this past week, I know what your injury is, I'm going to hurt you, and I'm going to put you out for good. Maybe they're doing an angle at the end of the show where Kevin Owens is about to freaking murder Sami Zayn and out comes Samoa Joe. I mean, there's any number of things you can do. I think it's smart. I think with the Itami injury, and if Zayn has to be out for a while also, there's this gaping hole in the main event picture on NXT, and Joe fits in there like a glove. He will make people forget about Sami Zayn and Hideo Itami at least for a few weeks. So I think it's very smart. And if he is booking indie dates, doesn't mean he can't be on TakeOver. Maybe he reached a deal with Triple H and said, listen, I've made a commitment to these promoters. I want to fulfill my obligations. But they start him on this show. They've done things like this before. They have done things like that before. I think he's going to be there. I think Joe will be on this special. Like I said last week, it makes sense. And it would make a lot of people geek out. No doubt about that. Speaking of Finn Balor, Chris Jericho against Finn Balor will take place on July 4th as part of WWE's Tour of Japan. Hideo Itami, I know they were hoping to kind of build things around him and his big return to Japan. I feel bad for the guy now because he's going to be out for a long time. So they took him off the tour. I think the plan was to do Chris Jericho against Hideo Itami on that show. And when Tommy went down, Jericho personally requested Finn Balor instead. So we're getting Jericho versus Balor. That's a dream match for some people. Not everybody would agree with that statement, but for some people it is. And I'm also sure it's a win for Chris Jericho. You know, for a main event level guy who used to lose so much, okay, Jericho was very giving with all of the matches that he would lose as a main event guy. For a guy who has that reputation, Jericho's having himself one hell of a 2015 so far. Shout out to Oliver Norgrove for tweeting me the standings. I don't know where he lifted this chart from, but it's the win-loss record for the WWE roster so far this year, including house show matches, which I think is all Jericho's had so far this year are house show matches. I don't think he's actually wrestled on TV. Maybe one match, but I can't remember when that would have been. Jericho is 16-0. He's the Undertaker of WWE house shows this year. Meanwhile, Seth Rollins, the reigning WWE champion, 11 wins, 71 losses. Kane, who has been all over television of late, even worse, 6 wins, 62 losses. No wonder the ratings are sinking with this authority angle. Why should we care? They're all losers. Every single one of these guys are losers. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So thank you to Oliver for that. Let's talk about the NXT show from this past Wednesday. Baron Corbin beat Solomon Crow with the End of Days. It was actually kind of cool how they did this because Crow came off the ropes and Corbin caught him in midair for the End of Days. So that was a good finish, but you know, the match itself was like 2 or 3 minutes long. Solomon Crow not impressing me so far on NXT. Not only the way they're booking him, but just, I don't know, his look, what he's doing, his character. I'm not digging it at all. It's not coming through. What is special about this guy? It does not translate so far. The crowd was chanting, Baron's gonna bore you during this match. My, oh my, how fickle the fans at Full Sail can be. 1 minute, you know, they're your personal timekeeper, and the next minute you're frickin' Roman Reigns. So Anyway, Corbin gets the win, and then after the match, Rhino came down, the jaw-jacked on the mic, or at least Rhino had some words for him on the mic, and it degenerated into a pull-apart brawl to build to their match at TakeOver. Sasha Banks beat the unnamed Kacy Kassidy. You wouldn't know her name unless you listened to this show, because they didn't bother telling you what her name was. She is an Australian graduate of the Storm Wrestling Academy, which is run by Lance Storm, up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I love doing that. This was like a Ric Flair title defense back in the territory days when he would bump around like crazy for the local star. This girl, Kacy Kassidy, got a shocking amount of offense on the champion. A shocking amount of offense for a girl whose name they never mentioned. I mean, I have no problem with them doing what they did here in this match and Sasha selling for her. And like I said, it reminded me of Flair back in the day. It's not like Ric Flair dominated all of his opponents. Every freaking place Ric Flair went to when he was the NWA champion, he gave the other guy everything. He bumped around like a madman for him. And I think, you know, things turned out pretty well for Ric Flair. He had kind of a nice career for himself and helped make a few guys along the way. So I have no problem with that formula. What I have a problem with, though, is that if you're going to give this girl so much offense, give her a fucking name. Some fans chanted black shorts at her as a playoff of blue pants. And Sasha Banks won with the Banks statement. For the love of God, the next time she's on this show, give her a fucking name. Speaking of people with no names, they aired another video for the impending debut of UHA Nation. But damned if we know what he'll be called, unless Creative has given him the name Coming Soon, which is the only thing they put on the screen. Which actually, in that case, if that is his name, this might be one of those rare times where Vince McMahon would be best suited to actually ditch the guy's first name. Think about that. Then he'll just be called Soon. That'll be his name. Every time I say that now, Soon, all I can think of is that stupid picture of the horse standing by the window, which I still don't get, by the way. Maybe somebody can explain that to me. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Alexa Bliss beat Carmella in a bad match. Oh, was this bad. Blake and Murphy came down and distracted Carmella, leading to her loss. I'm not even sure who to really put the blame on here. Probably Alexa. But it's not like Carmella is some great wrestler either. But I keep telling myself it is developmental. They will get better. I trust in Sara Del Rey and what they're doing down there, but this was not good. She cut a promo on Blake and Murphy, Carmella did, when the match was over. She actually stole Kaz and Enzo's shtick. Cut a pretty good promo, actually, and then she ended up calling them soft. I still think she turns on them at TakeOver. Tyler Breeze and Adam Rose with no Rosebuds. And now they've actually taken the Rosebuds away from him. They're stripping his character down, which, again, makes me think they might be going back to Leo Kruger soon. They beat Hideo Itami and Finn Balor. There was some friction at the end of the match between Balor and Itami. They did the old deal where one guy's a house of fire and the partner blind tags himself in, and then they stare at each other. Why did you do that? We've seen this a gazillion times before. He rolled up Itami for the pin. I got ahead of myself there. So Tyler Breeze got the win. Then as he and Adam Rose are celebrating after the match, Tyler Breeze nailed his partner with the supermodel kick to a big pop. So we have all three bodies are down. Finn Balor is down. Hideo Itami is down. Adam Rose is down. Only Tyler Breeze is left standing with his selfie stick. And the crowd loved it. They ate it up. And why shouldn't they? Tyler Breeze is fucking cool. The main event on the show is a face-to-face in the ring between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. There was a very blatant edit during this segment where the camera was fixed on Kevin Owens, so we couldn't see Sami Zayn, but it was very obvious they edited in some commentary, some comments from Sami Zayn saying, you know, even though I got hurt in the match with John Cena, I will be at TakeOver. It's very blatant when they did this, but I guess they did the best job they could with it. And Sami Zayn is out there just demanding to know, why did you attack me? Why did you apron powerbomb me? Why did you turn your back on me? And Kevin Owens wouldn't say a word. He kept staring at him, staring at the floor, wouldn't answer him. And Zayn started to wonder, is it jealousy because I got here first before you did? And again, Kevin Owens wouldn't say anything. And then Sami Zayn brought the family into it. Because remember, Kevin Owens says, I fight for my family. That's the most important thing to him. That and visiting zoos all over the country. He's a big zoo enthusiast. But his family is first. And Kevin, Sami Zayn said, is it your son wearing a Sami Zayn shirt? Is that what's bothering you here? I mean, is it the fact that he looks up to me more than you? And Kevin Owens looked like he was about to explode. And instead, he calmly left the ring and started walking to the back. And then he stopped. He was about midway up the ramp. Owens would not even turn around to stare at Sami Zayn and look him in the face. That's what I loved about this. The Kevin Owens has this character down just fucking perfectly. He nails it every single time out. Won't even turn around to give him the dignity of looking him face to face. And he says, I know you're hurt. I know what your injury is. And at TakeOver, I'm going to make sure that you don't come back. Unlike the last time. You're not going to come back after this. Just the way he delivered it, the way he said it was perfect. His speaking style, his promo style is unlike anybody else, not just on NXT, anybody else in the company. And I think that's what makes this work so well. He's not a promo like The Rock, right? The Rock is a completely different kind of promo style. CM Punk had a completely different kind of promo style. Kevin Owens is more, I don't even know what word I could use to describe it. Some people, I could see where some people who are not familiar with him will look at him and listen to some of his verbal work and say, what's so special about this guy? He's kind of stumbling over some words and it's almost like he's just a normal person having a conversation. That's the point. That's the point. And I think that style works for him. Anything you can do to separate yourself from the way everybody else does things is good, and I think that's a big part of what works. Even the way he looks. I mean, they have guys like Bull Dempsey, and maybe Joe will come in, but you don't have very many guys on the roster in WWE who look like Kevin Owens. You really don't. And I think, as talented as he is as a worker, like when he really turns it up, when he's not hurt, like his knee isn't bothering him or whatever, I mean, he could do things in that ring that if you just look at the guy, you would never think he could do. Kind of like Willie Mack, although what Willie Mack can do is completely different. Willie Mack can do a lot more than Kevin Owens, I think, but it's kind of the same thing. So that's what works for the character, and he just nailed it here. I loved it, and that's how they went off the air. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt. The next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff and get your shirt right now. I have not had a chance to see all of Impact yet. In fact, I've seen very little. Although what I did see, which was kind of interesting, was the Dollhouse entrance. They were out there for a tag match against Brooke Tessmacher and Rebel. And I noticed during their entrance something very odd that I've never seen before in wrestling, let alone in TNA. It was almost like a music video where they put the music credit, the song credit, in the lower left-hand corner, and they came out to a song by Hole. They came out to Doll Parts by the band Hole. I mean, that song, that's an old song. I mean, that song probably goes back to, what, 94, 95, something like that. Probably the influence there of Billy Corgan that we're seeing. I liked it. I mean, it was different. It was better than some of the usual generic music that we'll see pumped out in TNA. But that was really that, and a little bit of the EC3 Mr. Anderson stuff is all that I've seen so far. I just have not had the time to watch the rest of the show. Maybe that will start to change, though, because the big story with TNA this week is the fact that they are moving Impact. Finally, at long last, Impact is moving from Fridays back to Wednesdays. If you remember, toward the end of their run on Spike, Spike moved them to Wednesdays, which is a much better night for them. I know Lucha Underground is on that night, although it's not head-to-head. NXT is not on TV, it's on the network, so it's on demand. You can watch it whenever you want. I know people are talking about the Wednesday Night War, which it's a war in their own mind. There is no war. But they are moving to Wednesdays, and I think it's a good move. Hopefully not a move done out of desperation. There's been a lot of reports and rumors about Destination America having second thoughts about their relationship with TNA. They had certain expectations as far as advertisers are concerned. Not that the ratings have been all that great, although the ratings have probably been better than most of their other shows on that network. But I guess they're just very, very disappointed. I don't know what they can do. They have a contract. I don't think they can break the contract. If they did, that would be death for TNA. So hopefully they can't do that. But they have moved them to Wednesdays, same time, 9 o'clock, and that is a much, much better spot, I think, for TNA to be in, because, you know, Friday night is not a great night for television. It wasn't a great night for me, you know? That's not the only reason I don't watch SmackDown, but that's one of them. And a lot of the reasons in recent weeks I haven't had time to get to Impact before I do my podcast is because the show first airs on Friday night, which means if I don't see it live, I have to see it on Saturday, which I usually don't have time for. And then I start recording the show, you know, late morning on Sundays. So when do I have time to get through Impact on top of everything else? Maybe now I'll have a little bit of an easier time, maybe, in getting through the show. So I think it's a positive move for them. It's a rare bit of positive news, I think, for TNA is them moving back to Wednesdays. Lucha Underground, my favorite show of the week. Chris DeJoseph is a former WWE writer. He's now an executive producer for the show. He said on Twitter before it aired that this was one of his personal favorite episodes. When I heard that, I'm like, oh, this should be good. And it did not disappoint. I can see why. This is actually one of my favorite episodes of Lucha Underground as well. We open with Dario Cueto outside his Monster Brothers cage in the bowels of the temple. And he is letting his brother know that he has purchased 7 ancient medallions, Aztec medallions, that will give the person who wins them or holds them or whatever, it will give them immortality. And I guess it's official. Hulk Hogan is coming to Lucha Underground, brother. Can you imagine Hulk Hogan in Lucha Underground? I can't even imagine that. He would not fit at all in Lucha Underground. Although, maybe if he puts the old Mr. America mask on, he can be like Lucha Hogan. That'd be interesting. Opening match was Aerostar against the debuting Jack Evans. There's a name I haven't heard in a long-ass time. Jack Evans came out, got a big pop, but started to heal it up big time during the match, just acting all arrogant and cocky and, you know, jaw-jacking back and forth with the fans, which is something that's frowned upon in WWE. From what I understand, they actually teach you not to interact with the crowd. I guess interacting with the crowd is a bad thing, but it works in Lucha Underground. And Vampiro's on commentary saying how disrespectful Jack Evans is being because he claims that he invented Lucha, even though we all know Jericho invented that. So it was a Jack Evans match, which means, you know, it was full of crazy spots, including a 450 splash at one point off one of the ringside balconies. Craziest spot they saved for the end of the match, which is good. If you're going to do a crazy, wacky spot, it may as well be the finish. And it was Aerostar nailing a top rope Canadian destroyer for the win. Kind of weird that they would have Jack Evans lose in his debut, but this was a crazy match, a lot of fun. Total spot fest, but still a lot of fun. We have 7 men in the ring. Killshot, Phoenix, Sexy Star, King Cuerno, The Mac, Pentagon Jr., and they call him Cage. Dario Cueto says the winner of this match will earn one of the 7 sacred Aztec medallions. So that is what is up for grabs here in this match. And then the bell rang, and we were underway, and this match was crazy. Crazy. Couldn't even keep track of what was going on. One of my favorite Lucha Underground matches to date. Not my favorite, that's still Grave Consequences, but this is definitely up there as one of my favorites. This was just all kinds of just crazy wild stuff going on. Pentagon Jr. did a package pile driver slash Widow's Peak combo on Phoenix and Sexy Star. So he had Sexy Star on his back, hooked up for the Widow's Peak, and he had Phoenix hooked up for a package pile driver and dropped them down at the same time. I swear to God, I see something new on this show every single week. I love it. Phoenix ended up pinning Pentagon with after a standing moonsault for the win, and he gets the Aztec medallion. That was the only thing that annoyed me in this match. Why did they have to pin Pentagon Jr.? I mean, I have enough faith in this product, unlike certain other promotions, that I do think it will end up playing into something down the road. I hope so. I hope it does. Maybe Pentagon just fucking snaps and starts breaking everybody's arm, including fans. Why not put planted fans in the crowd and have Pentagon start breaking their arm? That'd be kind of cool. But I mean, why? Why? You have 7 people in this match, including a woman. No offense. 7 people in this match, and you had to pin Pentagon Jr.? As if the loss to Sexy Star a few weeks ago was not enough. That aside, I love this. This was so much fun. Dario Cueto is in his office meeting with the Trios Tag Champs, Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico. He says, since the crew beat 2 of them in a tag team match last week, he's giving them a crack at their Trios titles next week. And the champions begin to protest because Ivelisse still has a broken ankle. Her ankle is still in a cast. But like the badass that she is, she says, I only need my hands to beat their asses. Sidario says, well, not so fast. You'll need your legs as well, because this is going to be a ladder match. And they start to protest again, and Dario says, well, hey, you know, I could strip you of your titles now and save you from further injury if that's what you want. And of course, the champions back down. They reluctantly agree to fight, and they leave his office. I can only imagine what Angelico is going to do in a frickin' ladder match. After what we've seen this guy do so far, that's going to be awesome. Or tragic. It's going to be one or the other. Phoenix is sitting alone in the locker room area by himself on a bench, taking in his ancient medallion victory earlier in the show. When the lights begin to flicker, the lights go out, and Katrina appears from the shadows. And she tells him that Phoenix fell right into their trap, them being her and Mil Muertes. She went to give him the lick of death, and when Phoenix tried to grab her and stop her, she vanished. He was holding nothing but air. And then a bunch of dudes wearing Lucha ghost masks appeared standing on top of the lockers, and they jumped down onto Phoenix, I guess to, drag him to hell, repossess his soul, I have no idea, but we saw it from Phoenix's point of view, so as the ghosts descend down upon him, we cut to black, so we don't know exactly what happened. You know, if they did something like this in WWE, it would not work. I would criticize it, laugh at it, bash it, kill it with fire. If they did this in TNA, also, it wouldn't work. If they did this in Ring of Honor, it definitely wouldn't have worked. But for Lucha Underground, it works. Still goofy, but it works, and I don't even know why. It just does. It doesn't bother me as much. Main event was Alberto El Patron against Hernandez in a number one contenders match. The only way to win is by pinfall or submission. And we would soon find out why that stipulation was added. As Hernandez was coming to the ring, Matt Stryker referred to him as a 20-year veteran. And I thought I had misheard him at first, but no, that's what he said, a 20-year veteran. Now, Matt Stryker can be full of shit a lot of the time, but if that is true, this is the same Hernandez that we saw in TNA several years ago. Actually, not even several, just a few years ago. If this guy has 20 years of wrestling experience, then he's doing something wrong. I watched some of those matches of his in TNA, and I would have guessed he had maybe 5 years at the most. 20-year veteran. I could not believe my ears when he said that. Match itself did not even go barely 5 minutes before Johnny Mundo ran down, pulled Alberto out of the ring, and laid him out with a DDT. Heel Johnny Mundo. He actually turned heel here on this show. And then came one of the coolest things I've ever seen on Lucha Underground. So Mundo picks him up after the DDT, grabs him, and runs with him, and throws him through the window of Dario Cueto's office. Yes, they went all Sean and Marty on us here, but they cut to a camera inside Dario's office, and the visual of him sitting there as Alberto's body is just like glass everywhere, his body is hanging, dangling over the now broken window, that was just awesome. I guess the cinematography, you would call it, on this scene was so freaking great. And, you know, at first Dario's kind of stunned, and then he just very casually gets up, walks over, and pours himself a drink. like this is just normal, everyday business. You've just got to see this for yourself. This was even better than the barbershop angle they did all those years ago. Believe it or not. I mean, it didn't have Bobby Heenan on commentary talking about how Jannetty tried to dive through the window to escape. But the way this was shot was just so, so awesome. The crowd booed Mundo big time for the betrayal. He just stood there with this big, mean, angry look on his face. The temple has brought out the worst in Johnny Mundo, says Matt Stryker. He grabbed Alberto, whose forehead was just covered in blood, and rolled him back inside for Hernandez to get the easy pin. And Hernandez is your new number one contender for Prince Puma's Lucha Underground Championship. I can only assume this match only went 3 or 4 minutes. We haven't really seen a lot of Alberto. Actually, I shouldn't say that because he had that great match with Johnny Mundo a week or two ago. But I mean, I know he had at least a partially torn quad. I didn't think he'd be back wrestling this soon, so I'm just wondering if maybe the brevity of this match was because they didn't want him going that long because he's hurt. But again, he had that long match with Mundo a few weeks ago, so maybe, I don't know, maybe he's all healed up, or maybe it's just a very minor tear that won't get worse. I don't know, but I haven't really heard anything about that torn quad since he hurt himself. So I guess he's okay. Medics hit the scene to tend to Alberto. They covered his face with a towel while Dario Cueto just stood by his window looking up at the damage, drink in hand, picking off pieces of wood that were still hanging from where the glass used to be, doing so with a smirk on his face like he was impressed by what he had just seen. This was a fantastic episode. Seek it out. Track it down, do whatever you have to do. If you are new to the product, you can start with this episode. It'll get you hooked. And then you can go back and find the other episodes. I wonder if the entire season may end up on Netflix in a few months when the season ends in August, because I believe, from what I've read, El Rey has a lot of their other shows up there on Netflix, so maybe Lucha Underground might end up on Netflix at the end of the first season also. Those of you Netflix people might want to keep an eye out for that. That would make it a lot easier for you to just run through the entire series before the second season starts, if they do a second season. I still haven't seen any official confirmation of one, and I'm starting to get a little bit worried about that. A quick update here on Global Force Wrestling. Some roster updates. They've added some names. The Young Bucks were the ones who jumped out at me. Apparently the Young Bucks are only doing a few shows, a few house shows. I don't think they're doing TV tapings or anything. But they do have the Young Bucks, Shelton Benjamin, Scott Hall, who is coming in as a GFW legend. I don't know if that means he'll be wrestling. I hope not. Jim Cornette, another GFW legend. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan, another GFW legend. He'll be throwing out the first pitch at a, I believe, minor league baseball game at the end of this month. I'm not sure if he's actually wrestling or not. Again, I hope not. No offense to Hacksaw, but new wrestling promotion getting started. A lot of great young talent. I don't need to see Hacksaw Jim Duggan wrestling matches. So hopefully he's just some kind of ambassador. I don't know what that means as far as his relationship with WWE. I'd be a little careful if I were him. It seems like they kind of bring him back every now and then, and he's on good terms with them, and he starts working for Jeff Jarrett. That might not be the case. But anyway, he's in. And one more very interesting note here that was pointed out to me by many, many, many people on Twitter and Facebook. There was a tweet that the GFW Twitter account put up about a new show, a new YouTube show that will be, I think, starting this Monday on their YouTube channel called The Sound Off. Sound Off with Chael Sonnen. It's going to be some kind of show involving Chael. Chael's great, but very interesting. Mailbag time. If you would like to potentially sponsor the mailbag, you can email me. Email all business inquiries to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, or hit me up on Twitter, @solemonster. When you email me, also please include your name and where you are from. Ken, from San Francisco. At this year's SummerSlam, which match would you prefer? Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins, or Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton for the championship? Lesnar versus Rollins, I mean, hands down, no doubt about it. Seth is going to bump around for this guy's stuff like a maniac, and plus, people are going to cheer for Brock to beat his ass and just, you know, beat the piss out of the whiny, arrogant heel that Seth Rollins is. It just, I don't know, I just think it makes for a better dynamic in the main event than babyface or like kind of babyface versus babyface Orton would be. They can save the Orton match. I mean, I'd like to see it. They could save that for later on. They've got Brock locked up now for the next 3 years. He's going to need more opponents. Don't blow your load this year. So I'm sure Orton versus Lesnar is going to happen at some point, but there's no need for it to happen so soon. I want to see Lesnar beat Seth Rollins to a pulp. That's the match I want to see. Marley from the Bronx, I heard you talk about how guys like Hogan, Savage, and Austin aren't really homegrown WWE talent. In your opinion, who is the greatest WWE homegrown talent? Guys that have never wrestled anywhere else. My list would be Rock, Brock, Cena, and Orton. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good list. I'd say Rock is probably way up there if he's not at the top of the list. Brock Lesnar, for sure. And Randy Orton, definitely. You know, Brock and even also Kurt Angle. Brock and Angle, but especially Angle. I'd put Angle on the list, but Angle's a weird one because Angle is a complete freak. Angle just gets it. You know what I mean? He came from the amateur ranks, won a gold medal, didn't have any sort of previous pro wrestling experience that I'm aware of. Actually shunned WWE at first, and then later on had a change of heart and came back and ended up getting a deal that wasn't quite as sweet as the one they wanted to offer him after he won the gold medal. So I'm sure he regrets that. But he went right to WWE, and I know he was in developmental for a little bit, not very long. And when he came up, it was almost like this guy had it on day one. I mean, look at that first year on TV that Kurt Angle had. I mean, he debuted in November of 99. Wrestling freaking meat at Survivor Series. And a year later, he was WWE champion wrestling The Undertaker in the main event of Survivor Series. Won the King of the Ring. He won the European title. He won the Intercontinental title. He could wrestle. He could do comedy. He was very entertaining. He had the whole love triangle storyline with Triple H and Stephanie that never had an appropriate ending. Thanks to Triple H. I'm sure Triple H did everything in his power to make sure he cut that thing off real quick. So, Angle had a hell of a first year at WWE. I think a lot of that had to do with just this innate talent that this guy had. I don't know how much WWE really played a role in him becoming as great as he was. But, yeah, I mean, he didn't wrestle anywhere else, and he did train with them. And you could definitely say that Kurt Angle was a homegrown WWE pro wrestling talent. Same thing for Brock. So yeah, I'd say Rock, Brock, Angle, Orton. I mean, just keep in mind that WWE did not have a developmental system until the late 90s, early 2000s. So in the era of Hogan and Savage and Piper, you know, Hogan was in WWWF, and then he went to Minnesota to work for Vern in the AWA, and that's really where he became a star. So that was Hogan's deal. Savage, of course, wrestled for his father in the, I guess it would have been the IWA. Was that the name of the IWC? Maybe was the name of the IWC. I'm sorry, ICW. Yes, Randy Savage wrestled for the IWC. God damn it. But he was definitely cutting his teeth elsewhere before he ended up in WWE and in Memphis as well. Warrior was, you know, Dingo Warrior down in Texas, and even before that, he was with Sting and Power Pro Wrestling, wherever the hell it was that they got their start. So all of those big-name guys, it's not like they were homegrown talent that WWE had. Even Bret Hart. Bret Hart was wrestling in Stampede for his dad before he ended up in WWE. He was still very young and very green in a lot of ways and really matured into the wrestler that he would become. So maybe you can put Bret on that list, but not if the criteria is that they could not have wrestled somewhere else, then Bret, you can't put Bret on that list. Shawn Michaels, you can't put him on that list. Steve Austin, you can't put him on that list. Undertaker, you can't put him on that list. So it really wasn't until the late 90s, early 2000s with OVW and Les Thatcher's HWA that they really began to groom their own homegrown talent. And the names that go back to that period are Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton and Shelton Benjamin and guys like that. Lorenzo from Fresno. My question is about Bray Wyatt. Ever since he debuted, he would always bring up Sister Abigail. Do you think WWE would do a Sister Abigail storyline down the line? I thought of the idea to have Zara Schreiber as this powerful entity to Bray, just like how Wyatt would describe her in his promos. Zara, by the way, is the chick that Rollins sent those dick pics to, in case you're interested in that sort of thing. Who do you think, if you like that idea, would be a good fit for the Sister Abigail character? Well, I remember many years ago here on this podcast pitching an idea for, and even then it was far too late, but pitching an idea for a Sister of Destruction for Kane and The Undertaker. I was kind of surprised they never actually did something like that. I mean, that whole story is so over the top. Why not have this long-lost evil sister? And I always thought Daphne would be the perfect fit for that role. But I remember pitching that idea, thinking, it's still possible. They could still do it if they wanted to. But I think the time for Sister Abigail has come and gone. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. You know, it was 7 years after The Undertaker debuted before they introduced his little brother Kane. But I just think Sister Abigail is a better... she's better left unseen as this powerful entity that kind of guides Bray in everything that he does. You know, we never did find out who was in The Undertaker's urn. Yet, still, after all these years, he seems to draw some magical power from it. Or motivation or inspiration or whatever you want to call it. So I don't know that we need to have somebody play Sister Abigail. And I think that if you were going to do that, the time to do it was, I don't know, a year ago, year and a half ago maybe. Now it just, I don't know. I don't think it would work. Silvino from Las Vegas. My question is about family feuds. You've talked about great feuds like Bret and Owen and terrible feuds like the Bella Twins. You've said when it comes to family feuds, there's times when they work and times when they don't work. There's one family feud I'm curious why you never mention. Me personally, I enjoyed the matches, but the story behind the feud was just terrible, and that's the Hardy Boys in 2009. That aside, do you think the Usos will be the first family feud that does not happen? Well, it would not be the first. The Rougeaus never feuded in WWE. You had the Funk Brothers, Terry and Dory. They never feuded in WWE. I'm sure there must be others. Afa and Sika. As far as the Hardy Boys feud, I didn't like it. That's why you never hear me mention it. I didn't like it. I didn't like it when they did it in 2001, and they had that one crappy match on pay-per-view with Lita as the guest referee, and I didn't like it when they did it in 2009. I thought the storyline stuff they did where Matt took credit for Jeff's house burning down and his dog dying, which did happen in real life, all of that stuff was just pure garbage. I just didn't like it. The matches were okay. I think they had two, right? They had the WrestleMania 25 match, and then they had a match the next month. Maybe that was like a hardcore match or Extreme Rules or something like that. I vaguely have a memory of Matt Hardy being like tied down to a table and Jeff doing like a Swanton bomb or a butt bomb or something through it. Maybe I'm just making that up. But, you know, the matches were okay. The fans never really got behind it, and I don't blame them. I really didn't get into it either. Nobody wanted to see Matt and Jeff feud. The Usos, I think it's kind of the same thing. I don't think people would want to see the two of them feud. But, you know, the Usos, we'll see. I think Jimmy Uso, based on what little I've seen of him from Total Divas outside the ring, I think Jimmy Uso has a good singles heel run in him if they ever want to go down that path. He's got a ton of charisma, just a lot of personality. You could let Naomi, who already turned heel anyway, be his valet. It wouldn't work at all with Jay. I really don't think Jay can carry that, but I think Jimmy probably could. But I wouldn't break them up anytime soon. I think they're best suited to just stay a tag team. And with Jay out for 6 months with the injury, when they come back, they'll be fresh again. There's going to be no need to break them up. LeBrian says, when Vince Russo came to WCW, he was obviously trying to get rid of the old guys, but what if he had not gone with that plan as quick and instead had Goldberg fight Bret Hart, instead of having, rather, Bret Hart fight Goldberg right away? What if he did an angle where Hulk Hogan faced Bret Hart instead at Starrcade, with Hart turning heel and joining forces with Hall and Nash as the new NWO of 2000 to screw Hogan? Do you think that angle would have worked for WCW? And if that happens, Bret Hart doesn't get hurt and maybe WCW is still in business, because Russo used Hogan later on that year anyway in 2000. It was a disaster. It would have been a disaster either way. Anything with Vince Russo is a frickin' disaster. Hogan had 100% creative control in his contract. There is no way that Hulk Hogan would have allowed that to happen. There is not a chance in hell Hulk Hogan would have allowed that angle, no matter how good it may sound on paper, to go down that way without somehow sticking his nose in there and nixing it or fucking it up and changing it all around. There's no way. There's no way he would have allowed for himself to get screwed over that way, let alone by Bret Hart. And had Bret take the top heel spot in the company. No way. He would have kiboshed that on day one. And like I said, anything involving Russo is a disaster anyway. Apparently the guy came up with everything good and edgy that ever happened in wrestling, and all the bad stuff was someone else's fault. Raul from Switzerland. I just got into an argument with an Attitude Era fan, and I called John Cena a better pure wrestler than Stone Cold Steve Austin post-neck surgery. To say I got shit on would be an understatement. Did I deserve the shit that I got for calling Cena a better wrestler than Austin after his neck surgery? Well, I don't know. I mean, yes and no, I guess. Here's the thing. Even after the neck surgery, and Austin was even more limited in what he could do. I mean, he was already limited after the pile driver by Owen. And he got another 2 years out of it before he had to go under the knife. And after that, I think in a lot of ways, he was even more limited. But I look back at Steve Austin in 2001, and even though the heel turn in hindsight was not a good idea, he had some great matches that year. I mean, he had some great matches with Kurt Angle especially. So Austin can still go. There was a lot of fancy stuff he couldn't do anymore. He was more of a brawler. But Austin was a damn good wrestler. And so if you're asking me personally, I probably would disagree with you. I would say that John Cena is not as bad as people say that he is. I mean, if we're talking about a wrestling punch, then there's no contest. John Cena is atrocious, and Steve Austin, I don't care if his neck was broken in five places, still throws a better punch forever and a day more than John Cena does. I mean, he throws that freaking punch better. You know, I mean, come on. 6 days, yeah, 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, right? That's the expression he used in the interview with Mike Tyson that time. He throws a freaking awesome punch. He's a more believable wrestler. So it really just depends on what your criteria is for what makes a good wrestler. What is a good wrestler to you? Is it a guy who can do a lot of technical stuff? Is it a guy who can do a lot of the flying flippy shit? Is it a guy who has the psychology of wrestling down to a T? Is it a guy who makes it look as realistic as possible? Like Bret Hart had a knack for back in the day, every time Bret would take bumps and get his ass kicked in a match. I felt for Bret like this poor bastard's getting his ass kicked. And he would take that turnbuckle, that chest-first turnbuckle spot. I mean, the guy looked like he was getting an ass beating and then would fight his way back. And Bret is one of the best in terms of throwing a worked punch. Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler are probably at the top of my list. But it really just depends on what your own personal criteria is. Is it the number of great matches they had? Because John Cena's had a ton of great matches, but so is Austin. Now, Austin, less so after the neck surgery. So if we're going by that criteria, then you can say that maybe the answer is John Cena, because John Cena also had neck surgery. You know, not quite as serious as Austin, and Cena was only out for a few months. Not even a few, maybe 2-3 months at the most. But he has been in there with some really good guys like Brian and like Punk and like Umaga and guys like that. And he's had some great matches. But you know what? Cena's had great matches with a lot of different guys. He's had great matches with Orton. He's had great matches with, JBL. And I never saw JBL as some great wrestler. Look at these 5-star matches that JBL has had. But that I Quit match at Judgment Day back in 05, from what I remember of it, I know it was very bloody. That was a pretty damn good match. And you can't just put it all on JBL as the veteran. John Cena held his own. So Cena gets a lot of shit. I think deservedly so to a point. Undeservedly so, because there are some people who have this irrational hatred for him. But it really just boils down to what your definition of a good wrestler is. Your definition may differ from mine. Mine may differ from 5 other people. It really just depends. I personally would say no, but it's not by a wide margin or anything like that. But one of the important components, I think, of this, at least for me, is I would like a guy who makes it look and feel as realistic as possible. And when I see John Cena in the ring, I'm sorry, but I see a guy who is playing professional wrestler. I see a guy who is constantly calling spots, which annoys the fuck out of me like you have no idea. No idea how annoying that is and how that just takes you out of the moment. He'll do it multiple times. I mean, look, everybody's been caught at some point or another calling spots, even Austin, okay? It happens. But I think it's the frequency that's so alarming. John Cena has been doing this now for 12 years. He's the top guy in the company. He should be a little bit better with that kind of thing. that sort of stuff, I think, really brings him down to me a few notches. Austin went in there, balls to the wall, looking to kick people's ass. He looked like an ass kicker. That's exactly what he went in there and did. John Cena does not have that same vibe. And so for that reason, I would go Austin over Cena, but it might be different for other people, depending on what they're looking for. And lastly here, Jason from the Bronx. I checked out your interview with JTG, which prompted me to buy his book. JTG paints a very vivid picture of some of the shady inner workings of the wrestling business, not unlike what we've heard from in various shoot interviews over the years. With more and more people speaking out to make future wrestlers aware of the negatives of the business, what kind of effect do you think this will have on the next generation of wrestling? None. It will have no effect whatsoever. There have always been awful stories about wrestling promoters going back decades. I mean, what we're really talking about here are the inner workings of WWE more than anything else. I mean, I'm sure the TNA locker room has a lot of that, you know, at least some of that insane bullshit where you can get heat for doing something completely stupid. I guess every major wrestling locker room probably has that to some extent, WWE more so than others. But if you're a guy who wants to get into wrestling because it's a passion of yours, you grew up watching wrestling, you want to get rich, some stories about guys playing ribs on other people and getting heat for this and heat for that, it's not going to dissuade anybody from getting into wrestling. If they don't get into wrestling, it's going to be because they have a change of heart for some other reason, because they took a bump on day one and said, huh, that hurt, I don't like that, I'm going to go do something else with my life. It's not going to be because JTG or Curt Hawkins or somebody in a shoot interview said, hey, stay away from this business, it's a lot of juvenile bullshit. That's all sports. You can go into any football locker room in the NFL and get fucking hazed. Does that mean you don't become a football player? Probably not. If you have a passion for it and you want to do it, you're going to do it. If you don't do it, it's because you got hurt or for some other reason. But I don't think it's going to affect things at all. It's not like all of a sudden all these would-be pro wrestlers for the next 10 or 20 years are going to go do MMA instead. You know, and if they do, it's not going to be because of that. Again, if you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the official email address. Please follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle. And you can also follow us on Facebook three different ways. We have the official profile page, facebook.com/thesolemonster. You can friend me there. We have an official fan page for the podcast. Type in Solemonster Sounds Off. Please like the page. You could also apply for membership to our private discussion group. Also, type in the full name of the podcast. It should come up from the search bar there. You will apply. You may have to wait a little bit. And once I approve you, you can be part of our community now, over 3,000 members strong. So thank you to everybody who has made that community what it is. I really do think it's one of the best ones out there. It's not always a family that gets along, but it is like a family on there. And there's a lot of good discussion mixed in with some of the other garbage that sometimes pops up. But it's a good place to be, and hopefully you will join us there. Now, last week at the end of the show, I kind of told everybody what was going on personally in my life. I mean, you all know, again, what happened with my dad and everything else. I've been through a lot of shit these last few months. This has not been a good year for me or my family. And there was some stuff going on with my mother of late, you know, that we couldn't figure out what was going on, but there was pain, and there was some tests that were done, and some weird things that were coming up on MRIs and such. And so she went in for, technically it was two different biopsies, and I was there with her, and we were waiting. We expected the results on Monday, and unfortunately we didn't get the results back until Thursday, so you can just imagine how crazy that whole week turned out to be for all of us. I mean, we thought that weekend was going to be rough. It turned out to be almost the entire week. We were just a basket case. And you guys, I have to say, you know, you guys, I got so many messages, emails and tweets and Facebook messages and stuff from you guys. Some of you even sharing your own stories, which you didn't have to do. But it was really cool that you did. And I just want to say thank you to everybody, because you guys, you know, in a way, you guys are kind of like a support system all by yourself, a support system of hundreds and, you know, thousands of you. And it was really cool to hear from everybody. So I can't thank everybody individually, although I tried, but I will say it here. Thank you to everybody who sent messages to me. So anyway, we finally, after a week, got the results of these tests. And it was not good news, which is what I had feared. And you know, it is cancer, unfortunately. And you never want to hear a doctor say that he is surprised and has never seen anything like this before. that is not something I expected to hear. And I mean, as it turned out, it was actually a recurrence of something that she did have before, which shocked the hell out of him, and it shocked the hell out of me, because he was talking like it was something completely different, and given the area that we were kind of focusing on, I was very fearful that it was something like really, really sinister. And it turned out to be, breast cancer, but elsewhere now. Now it's traveled elsewhere, and I don't even know what to say, really. It was a shock to the system for sure, and there's a lot of questions now, and I kind of have to get myself back in that mode from 7 years ago and 10 years ago when she went through all the other stuff, and it's going to be tough. I mean, there's going to be a lot of it's going to be tough. It's going to be a hard road. I heard some things I didn't want to hear. We're going to meet with him on Monday, and I'm hopefully going to get more answers at that point. I got a ton of questions. You know, we're thinking of every question under the sun that we want to ask him, and so then we can hit the ground running and get going on what needs to be done. But, you know, you never want to hear that it's something chronic. There, you know, unlike previously, there is no cure for this. You can try to treat it. You could try to manage it, but there is no getting rid of it. You know, once you have metastatic cancer, I guess that's automatically considered stage four. I mean, there's nothing you can do to actually get rid of it. You can just kind of manage it. I almost liken it to use like an analogy. If you are being hunted down by like an axe murderer, and the axe murderer is in your house, right? Like if you have cancer and you want to beat it, what you do is you fight back against the axe murderer, and you kick him out of your house and you lock the door so he can't come back in. Well, in this case, it's a situation where the axe murderer has reappeared like Jason frickin' Voorhees. This thing just doesn't die, and it's back in the house, and you can't get him out of the house. So the best thing you can do is try to lock him in one of the rooms. So he's always going to be there. He's always going to be inside. But just lock him in a room so he can't get anywhere else. I always think of these weird analogies, and that's the one I came up with. That's why I've been kind of quiet. I've just been dealing with all of that and trying to get everything prepared for this upcoming Monday. And so that's kind of where we are on that front. It's not good news, but, you know, I guess you try to stay optimistic and hopeful, because what the hell else can you do, right? You don't just freaking throw your hands up in the air and give up. So, I really want to try to not, I hate even doing this, because I feel like I'm kind of bringing everybody else down. I did want to give you guys an update. So I'm thinking maybe instead of, talking about it on the show, maybe I'll start like one of these blogs, like these free blogs on one of these, blog hosting sites. Maybe I'll start a blog or something about the whole experience going forward, not every day or anything like that, but just to kind of give myself an outlet to kind of get my thoughts out and all that kind of stuff. And if anybody's interested in following along, then they have the option to do so, or you don't have to, because I know some people just don't deal well with stuff like that, but just, it's entirely up to you guys. Maybe I'll do something like that, but I just wanted to let everybody know what's going on. I wanted to wait until the end of the show, too, because it would have been weird, I think, to kind of lead off with that, and now it's like I have to get out of that mode and be like, all right, let's talk about payback now. Like, who gives a fuck about payback, right? So I said, let me just wait until the end, and and I'll give everybody the update then, but it sucks, man. It just, cancer fucking sucks. I've said that before. It fucking sucks. Because here's a person who's already been through so much, you know, she's been through enough for a lifetime for one person, and, you know, 55 years old, and she's already been through so much shit, and, it's just one of those things, you know, the way it was kind of explained to me, all it takes is a few little cells that escape that first time all those years ago, and they lay dormant, and then at some point, for whatever reason, they wake up, and that's what happened here, 7 years later, and it was definitely a surprise. It was not what any of us, including the doctor, were expecting. So we'll go from here, and we'll see what happens. But you guys were very concerned, and I just wanted to let everybody know what the update was, and it was not good news. But we'll just go from here, because what the hell else can you do now? I'm hoping and expecting that it won't impact the podcast too much. Obviously, if there's a weekend where I can't do a show, I have other things to tend to, or the side effects from the treatment or whatever, then I'm going to tend to that, because that's just how it has to be, and I don't think anybody's going to mind that. I'm hoping that won't happen too often, if at all. I'm going to still try to work around that. I think the plan is to, once we get going on treatment and everything, it might be a once-a-week outpatient kind of thing, but we're going to try to, I think, structure it in a way where do it maybe late in the week, so if there's any sort of horrible side effects, it really only affects her on the weekend, and that way she can go back to work on Monday. Well, the weekend is when I do my show, obviously, so we'll see how that's going to work. I mean, she's here now, and so I'll be able to do whatever I need to do if she needs me for anything, but just be aware of what's going on. Obviously, if it is going to affect the show in some way, I will try to let everybody know in advance on Twitter, Facebook. I will try to give everybody a heads up, but I just want everybody to understand what's going on, so if it does affect the show here and there, you'll know why. But I have to say, when you're talking about stuff like this, and thank God she is working, she has insurance, but anybody who lives in this country knows how freaking shitty the medical system, the healthcare system in this country can be. And insurance doesn't pay for everything. It's amazing already. Just for certain blood tests and stuff, we're already getting bills in the mail for like $500, $300. And this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning of everything. So if anything, it actually is even more important, I think, for me to keep doing the show so I can kind of support her in any way I have to. So it's not a case where I'm going to dial the show back. If anything, I really have to kind of recommit myself to the show and keep it going, because I think it's more beneficial than not to keep things going as is. So it shouldn't affect things too much. And like I said, if it does, I'll be sure to keep you guys updated and give you a heads up on social media. So follow me on there. But again, thank you for all the messages and the comments. It's just overwhelming. I can't thank everybody individually, so I am thanking you here and now. I read everything you guys sent me, and it's really cool. And that's it. I really don't have anything else to say. It's just I'm still kind of shocked and pissed off about everything. But I don't know. I guess that's natural, right? Just to have to go through all this shit again. It's like unbelievable to me. So we will be back next weekend with a brand new sound off. I guess that's Memorial Day weekend. That'll be episode 384. I am going to try to do a Sound Off Extra payback review on YouTube tomorrow. I make no guarantees, but it's my plan right now. Since I am off, we're not seeing the doctor until later in the afternoon, so my hope is that I can record early enough in the day to get it up before we head over to the doctor's office, so you might want to keep an eye out for that. And until next time, be well, stay safe. We will see you right back here next week. And until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster sounds off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monster sound off.